Welcome to the Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. This is Chin Music. This is our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. Sitting next to me, Lavelle E. Neal III, Star Tribune sports columnist, Roy Smalley, former twin star turned Twins broadcaster. I'm Jim Suhan, and we appreciate everybody who came out. Thank you for being here. We're going to watch some baseball, talk some baseball. I got to start, Roy. You brought the bat, as I requested you to.
Well, you made me.
Is it a Roy Smalley model?
It is.
Oh, wow. Let me see. I'm always amazed at how thin that is. How thin. I mean, really. I tried to play baseball, you know, and I was an okay little league player, but I still, when I look at that bat, I cannot figure out how you hit something that's moving at 98 miles an hour or breaking with that sweet spot. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, who's to say I did?
Well, we know you did. We have statistics.
You know, I just a quick bat technology.
Yeah.
Not technology, but it made sense to me. I heard someone say one time, if you got a 32-ounce bat and you have a smaller barrel, then by definition, there's got to be more dense wood in the barrel than if you had a 32-ounce bat and the barrel were bigger. It would have to be not as dense. That I don't know if that's true or not. It made sense to me, and so I used thinner barrel bats my whole career.
What's the heaviest bat you ever swung?
Heaviest bat, I swung 34 ounce one time, but not very long. 33 to start the season sometimes. I always finished at 32.
My childhood hero was Dick Allen, and Dick Allen swung a 40-ounce bat.
He was ridiculous.
And swung it like it was 28 ounces.
Well, his forearms were massive, and he had great wrist. The bat would just snap through the strike zone.
Well, also, you start with a waist that was about 30 inches, and it just went wedged directly out. I mean, the guy, he was one of my heroes, too, because he played for my uncle, Gene Mock, when he came up in 1964 as Rookie of the Year, and I used to hang out in the clubhouse with the Phillies in Dodger Stadium when they came to town, and he was always nice to me. He was the best player, best athlete on the field, and it was always real nice to me, and so he was my hero.
Wait, I think he was a shortstop or a third baseman when he first came up, ended up over at first.
Yep, and played some outfield. He played all over. They were just trying to get his bat in the lineup because he could hit.
Wow, 351 career homers.
Yeah, he could hit.
He's my man.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. He will admit, though, he doesn't know if he got the most out of his talent, which is scary.
He didn't get the most out of his talent. But I told the story about what Mark said about him one time, didn't I?
Tell it again.
Well, he was a bit of a bad boy when he came up, and he was having this great year, a couple years, and it just drove Gene and everybody crazy because he was out late at night, and he was always getting in trouble and doing stuff. And the media came up and asked Gene about him one time. They said, "What are you gonna do about Richie Allen?" It was Richie back then, Richie Allen. And what do you think about him? Gene says, "I know exactly what I think about him." They said, "Oh, they all got their pads ready." They said, "What?" He said, "It's really very simple. He likes high fastballs and fast high balls."
Only in baseball do you get lines like that, you know?
Hey, when I covered the Royals with Bob Boone's the manager, and he found out that I was a White Sox fan and like Dick Allen, and he played with Allen a little bit in Philadelphia. And he said Dick Allen was the only guy he knew that would come to the ballpark hungover from the night before and hit the first batting practice pitch 430 feet.
No, he was awesome. Just awesome.
There's a change in the game, too, because in the old days, we know anecdotally and personally the guys would drink beer all night, drink whatever all night, sleep it off, come to the ballpark, drink some coffee.
Yeah, you never really slept it off. I'm just going to tell you.
Attempted to sleep it off.
You were in bed.
Yeah, but we all know of many cases where somebody got three hits with a hangover. I don't think the modern ball player gets away with it. I don't know what's changed. Maybe it's attention. Maybe they can't hide it. Maybe it's the scrutiny. I don't know. But nowadays we've been around Twins players. I don't know if we should mention any names who we know came to the ballpark not feeling very well, and they were not received as well these days as the old guys used to be.
No.
Why was it that Tom Kelly never played Dan Gladden a day game after night game?
There were a few of those guys.
Danny
never played day games after night games. Delmon Young very rarely played day games after night games.
Boy, they made me play day games after night games.
Well,
I've had I had a couple moments, not very often, but I had a couple moments when I got through the game and actually had played pretty well. I got back to my hotel room and collapsed on the bed and said, "How did I do that?" Because I didn't think that was gonna work. But well, I think it's just a different culture now. It's not. I mean, guys would laugh at you back then. And again, I hardly ever did. I had a couple moments, but there were guys that it was just part of their program. You know, every once in a while, they'd come to the ballpark, and I've told the story about. I mean, George Brett, we just talked about this not too long ago.
Oh, George. I covered George.
Brett was one of the all-timers, right? I mean, he never, ever, ever shied away from a good time at night after a ball game. And he was in the training room one time, laying down, just hung over and hoping like heck that Whitey Herzog wasn't going to put him in the lineup. And Whitey walked through, saw him sitting there just green, patted him on the rear end, said, "Playing third, hitting third." And that was, you know, that's the way it was.
Whitey showed up for Brett's retirement, his final game as a Royal, and he was telling Brett stories. And he said, there'd be times he'd come into the clubhouse before a game and look at George and go, "My God, son, how late were we out to last night?" And he'd go, 5 o'clock in the morning. He'd take him in his office and let him take a nap on his sofa in his office and then make him like a ham sandwich. And he'd wake up and go like 3 for 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it never bothered him.
I needed this kind of conversation. I spent last night watching The Bachelorette with my wife. I need this for cleansing.
Hold on.
I need to talk some baseball.
I finished my beer here.
Yeah, Roy is drinking just to get in the spirit of things here. This is part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. This is our baseball show. We've got tons of sports content. Best sports lineup in town. We've got great outdoor content, variety show content. We're continuing to add some cool people to the network. Thank you to all those who have listened. Thank you to our producer, Brandon Morton, for making it all happen. And thank you to our sponsors, 11 Wells Distillery. I went there the other night, Lavelle. We had a few drinks. Really cool space. I really liked their bourbon. I really liked their single malt. I really liked their rum.
That rum is awesome.
The rum is, and yeah. I've bought high-end rum and these people on people's recommendation and tried it and gone, okay, that doesn't really do anything for me. Theirs is really good.
No, it's real tasty. I have a bottle of it after my visit there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
I think they aged it in one of their whiskey casks that had a little bit of tinge to it, mm-hmm. and it came out really flavorful. And they're really proud of it because. You know, you think of 11 Wells, you think whiskey, but they're trying to expand their horizons a little bit and offer a little bit of a different choice. And they did a great job with that rum. It's just a cool place over there.
It is.
Now, I mean, from start to finish, everything is done on site, mashed, fermented, distilled, aged on site in the same building. You know,
so imbibed.
Yes, exactly. Yes, right. Yes. And consumed.
Yes.
So, and they're going to open on Thursday nights now. So it'll be open Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night.
Excellent.
For you folks who want to go taste some perfect activity before a wild game because you're not too far from the X. It's because it's basically a little bit off of 7th Street.
Right.
Run down to the X after having a pregame whiskey. So, check it out, 11 Wells.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of liqueurs, too. My wife really liked the coffee and the cherry liqueurs. Those are all really good. So check out 11 Wells Distillery over in St. Paul. We also want to thank Better Edge, Minnesota Propane, and Pizza Luce. And, by the way, the next live show for Talk North after this will be October 26th, 7 p.m. at the downtown Pizza Luce. Lindsay Whalen is going to sit in for Cheryl Reeve on the Cheryl Reeve Show. Lindsay's probably going to bring some people with her. As you all know, Lindsay's a great, great human being, great basketball player, and she'll be a lot of fun to talk to. Let's get to what's going on in the playoffs right now. And I have some complaints. I know that shocks you. I have some complaints to get to, but let's start with the good stuff. What has grabbed you? And didn't we all predict that Jason Castro and Eddie Rosario were going to be big in the postseason?
Yeah, we saw that coming, didn't we? I was impressed with the Atlanta Braves jumping out to a 2-0 series lead against the Dodgers. And they were up 5-2 yesterday. And I'm sitting there going, the Braves are going to go up 3-0 in the Dodgers. L.A. is going to explode after this game. But then the Dodgers scored like 4 in the bottom of the 8th or something, end up winning 6-5. So that series is at 2-1. It's amazing because they don't have Ronald Acuna, who's one of the best all-around players in the game because he's out for the year with ACL, a torn ACL. But their pitching staff, they have put their starting staff is calibrated, locked in right now, and they're firing at all cylinders. And they're giving the Dodgers all they can handle.
Yeah, I was surprised with that. But the Dodgers, you know, came in, and part of it's that Braves pitching staff that you're talking about, Lavelle, but, you know, they're not swinging the bats well. Trey Turner is really not swinging it well. And you look at that lineup and you say, well, I don't care how good the Braves pitching is. That lineup is too good to pitch to. And what's been the big surprise is that it's almost been the Atlanta Braves that have been their lineup been too good to pitch to. They've been swinging it really well. But I got to tell you, the turnaround that Cody Bellinger accomplished last night.
Yeah.
He turned around a high heater. And that's not his pitch. He's a low ball hitting son of a gun. He struck out on his high fastball the time before. He gets it again in the bottom of the eighth. It's a 3-run home run. And then, of course, who else? Mookie Betts drives in the winning run, and the Dodgers come back and save themselves. There's no way as Lavelle's talking about this pitching staff of the Braves, you go up 3-0 against that pitching staff, you're not going to win 4 in a row. I mean, you're just not going to. They do everything too well. So gigantic fastball, turning around a fastball by Cody Bellinger.
He is.
That's what I love about these playoffs when it's this caliber of team in there. Somebody's going to do it at some point in time. You just never know that they're so good. These guys, as good as the pitching is, all four of these teams can hit. We're watching the Astros and the Red Sox. The Red Sox looked like they were going to blast the Astros right out of the place, right out of the playoffs. And with all that firepower they have, and here we got Framber Valdez today throwing a gem. First four innings, you know, perfect, and the Astros, you know, score 6 runs, and now I mean they're going to put this game away. It's in the 7th inning, and they're up 7-0. I mean, so these guys back and forth. It's just what I love about it, Lavelle, is it's a heavyweight fight. I mean, yep. Guys are just, you knock this guy down and he gets up and he knocks the other guy down, and it won every night.
Remember that old basketball video game that if you hit 3 straight shots, you're on fire? And you just keep shooting from all places. That's what Yordan Alvarez is right now. First at bat against Chris Sale, got a fastball away, homeward over the Green Monster. Second at bat, I believe it was a slider, hits it opposite field off the Monster. And then while I was driving over here, he doubled again to drive in 2 runs. So that dude is going to be one of the most feared sluggers in baseball for the next several years, because he was hammering Chris Sale today. And Dusty's about to go up 3-2 in this series. Although, I say that, in that ballpark, you can score a lot of runs in a hurry. So the Red Sox still have 9 outs to go, so we'll see what happens.
If anybody would like to ask a live question, come up and grab the mic over by Lavelle. We have we have 3 things to give away. This is not real high-end stuff, but we'll send you home with something. For the first 3 questions that are asked, feel free to come up whenever you like. Brandon's going to take it all, so never mind. No, we'll give it away. I don't know how to feel about the Houston Astros, because I'm pulling for – how can I pull for the manager and not pull for the team?
It doesn't
make sense. I love Dusty Baker. I want to see Dusty Baker win. I don't want to see the Astros win.
Yeah, it's so funny. my wife is over in the back booth over there yelling at the Astros cheaters.
And she's right.
No, I know you're a Dodger fan, Darren. I know, but we got to get there first. Hi, Lily. So I got the whole crew here, right? Two of my grandkids and the whole gang. But I really didn't know who I was going to be pulling for. And it's all that way for me most of the time with football games and, you know, like the Super Bowl, playoffs, and World Series. I don't really know. And I get into it, and then I know. And I don't want the Astros.
Yeah.
I just don't. It's just that is going to sit with me for a long time. And I love Dusty Baker. And actually, if I divorce myself from my emotion about how I hated them cheating the way they did, I love those Astro players because they can hit and they're good players. I mean, they're what the Major League players ought to be like. And yet they behave like Major League players shouldn't be like.
Yep.
And that makes me crazy.
I've run into people who were like, I don't like all four of these teams. They don't know who to pull for.
I'm kind of that. They're kind of there.
They don't like the Braves because of the nickname, and I don't know if they still do the Tomahawk Chop
they
or
do.
Not.
Oh,
no,
they do.
Yeah.
They
so
do.
People have issues with that. They don't like the Houston Astros because they're cheaters. The Dodgers are the big bullies, big spending, obsessive team. And then who's the fourth team? Who am I missing?
The Red Sox.
And the Red Sox. They've had their issues as well. People don't like the Red Sox either. So,
I have a hard time. I want to pull for the Red Sox just because anti-Astros. And I love that Red Sox lineup. I love the way they hit. But, I mean, if you're going to be mad at the Astros for cheating, how could – I mean, it's the reverse of Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker had nothing to do with it, but he's got a team full of cheaters he had nothing to do with. And you've got a bunch of Red Sox players that are great players, have nothing to do with any of that. But Alex Cora was one of them,
right?
Was right in the middle of the Astros, you know, cheating. So it's like, what the heck? What do you do?
You know what I'm cheering for? And this is the only way I can really rationalize. I'm cheering for ballparks. I think a Dodger Stadium, Fenway Park World Series would be really cool to watch on TV.
For a beat writer, that's some great air miles.
It's always the air miles, the Marriott points. Baseball Writers Association of America is sponsored by Marriott.
Think of all the bourbon that can be consumed in a five-hour flight.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Although you can consume bourbon anywhere.
You're absolutely right. But enduring the travel would be a pain in the rear end, but looking at that, your mileage account at the end, that's a beautiful thing. So I can't wait to see when I come back from the Winter Olympics what my miles are going to look like.
You're going to be flying over Antarctica to get there, so you'll probably get plenty of them. Yes, hello.
Hi, my name's Linda.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for being here.
It is great to sit here and talk to number five and see you guys.
Thank you.
Really, he was one of my favorites. And when we talk about baseball in the good old days and, you know, postseason play, and, you know, we've had some really good party times in Minnesota baseball, and we say, oh, those were the good old days. But as we look back in 10, 20 years, we're going to say, oh, maybe 2020 or 21 was the good old days. But in baseball today, it seems like the Minnesota Twins are trading off our all-stars. You know, there's a number of them, but Eddie Rosario, Cruz hitting postseason home runs, and, you know, pitching is to be desired. But what are the Minnesota Twins going to do to put that team back into, or what should they do, in your opinion, to put our teams back in postseason and not only get into postseason but be competitive in postseason?
So I'm gonna set up Lavelle here. I'm gonna go back and address something that we've talked about a lot that is germane to what you just said, and then I'm gonna let Lavelle answer your question specifically about what they're gonna do, what they need to do, what they're gonna do. But with respect to them trading off all these great players that we love to watch, Berríos and Cruz, Rosario, etc. The Twins looked up this year because of injuries, because of poor performance by a lot of, you know, so Buxton went down, Maeda went down, Kepler wasn't having a good year. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that were contributing to them being not very good. Even they brought up Alex Kirilloff, who was going to be a really good player, and he got hurt two times, you know, and shut him down. So they're looking at a season where they said, oh, my gosh, we got either A, old, or B, wrong about some talent that we thought was going to be good, or C, just really unlucky about injuries. But we got to do something. We have got to do something. And so then how do you do something? Well, you get a whole bunch of really good young players so that some make it, some will be good parts of trades for who you really want. So you had to go get bodies. You had to get players. Because Jose Berríos wasn't going to sign with the Twins. He wanted to be a free agent. You had to do the best you could. And they did pretty well. Lavelle will tell you about that. And Nelson Cruz, 41 years old, and he's making $10 million. I mean, chances are the Twins aren't going to keep him at age 42 next year. So can we trade him to somebody that's in the pennant race that he can help put them over the top? Because we might get real value because they're saying, okay, I want to – the Rays want to win this year, so we'll give up some prospects, and they got some good players. So that's why you're seeing sometimes you have to make these hard decisions about, yeah, these guys are really good, they're the best players we have, but they're not going to put us over the top this year or next. We need a new crop of players that we have for a long time that will put us over the top, and they have to do something about it. So with that soliloquy, I'm going to turn it over to Lavelle, because Lavelle's going to tell you exactly what they're going to do to make things better.
Donaldson was supposed to be our real all-star, and I haven't been too impressed.
He played his best after they were eliminated, basically. So
he did.
He actually had a good year, but most of his production came when they were out of it.
He ended up playing he was a top 10 third baseman by the end of the year, but you wish you would have seen it during the first half of the season. Lynn, you're right. Of the four teams that are left in the playoffs, there are 9 ex-Twins alive in the postseason. which is a ridiculous number. The X-Twins factor is huge this year. Roy's right. Here's what the Twins screwed up at. They tried to find bargains and tweak something or have a guy adjust his mechanics and get some better movement on his pitches and see if they can get them turned around, and then they have, like, a good pitcher that they didn't spend a lot of money for, okay? They decided to fill up the back end of the rotation with Matt Shoemaker and J.A. Happ, and it was a disaster. On top of that, their next line of pitchers, because you need, like, 9 or 10 starters to get through a season now, their next level was, like, Lewis Thorpe, Randy Dobnak, and Devin Smeltzer. Well, Dobnak got injured. Thorpe was bad and got injured. Smeltzer was bad and got injured, all right? So their pitching inventory was loused up from the start. And I think they play with the margins too much, trying to maximize value for as little financial output as possible, and they need to invest in quality starting pitching. Okay, I was reading a story about a month ago, and they said in order to come up with 3 good starters, you need to start with 10 good starters because 2 or 3 are not going to make it. Another 2 or 3 are going to get injured, and it's going to take a couple years for the others to get enough experience where they can be factors. So from that aspect, they are kind of starting at ground zero here with their pitching because they made some trades and they got some young pitchers who have talent. And they also had some kids that got up to AA and AAA this year who are good. And when I say good, they're throwing like 97 to 100 miles an hour. They got good breaking balls. They just don't have any major league experience. And we're probably going to see those guys at some point in, next year. The trade of Cruz, by the way, Cruz only hit like 220 for the Rays after the deal, brought back Joe Ryan, who right now will be our opening day starter next year. But Ryan has a lot of ability. He's got moxie. He's got guts. He attacks with his fastball, and it's got funky movement on it. He's going to be a good pitcher. Bailey Obrey called up during the season. He showed a lot of promise, a 6'10 kid. All right? They have to make sure those guys are pushed as far back in the rotation as possible. Okay? They have tried to sign quality pitching in the past. Yu Darvish offered him $20 million a year. He just signed with the Cubs. Zach Wheeler, they offered him $20 million a year. He signed with the Phillies. One reason was his wife had family closer to Philadelphia, and she wanted to be close to her family. All right, he actually had great conversations with the Twins, like talking to Rocco, but they ended up making a family-based decision. So they've tried before, but they got to do more. They got to win these battles. You kind of get sick and tired of them finishing second in some of these sweepstakes. So they have got to drop $20 million on the pitcher next year and have him front the rotation. I don't know if it's a Kevin Gausman, who had a good year for the Giants. He's a free agent. I don't know if it's Marcus Stroman, who's a talented pitcher. He was with the Mets last year. He's going to be a free agent. But those are the type of guys they need to be looking for. And then, you know, find a mid-level guy or two. And then you got the kids to fill out the back of the rotation. At least they have upside and ability. And you also have to come up with a stockpile of 9 or 8 or 9 starters that you can rely on during the season to get you through the regular season. But the key to the offseason is that they got to spend some money. I think they're aware of that. How big is their payroll next year? We don't know yet. Don't know if the numbers have been, if Derek Falvey or Thad Levine know what numbers they're going to play with next year. But they're going to have money to spend because they got money coming off the books. So, to me, everything starts with getting that pitching staff ready because you can get through a season with good pitching and decent offense. It's hard to out-hit a bad pitching staff, and which the Twins ended up doing for the first half of the season. And their bullpen, they need a closer. They need one guy that can come in the 9th inning and finish off instead of, okay, Terrell Rogers can close out in this situation, and then Alex Coleman can close out in this situation. You know, they got to stop that. They got to go back to having guys in defined roles. The guy knows I'm the 6th-inning guy. Okay, I may pitch the 7th or the 8th inning. I'm the closer. I've got the 9th. They've talked to they've talked their bullpen into believing that you guys could be used at any time after the 5th inning, so you gotta be ready. That crap doesn't work. Okay, they got to get a little more structure in how they manage the bullpen and help Rocco make better decisions because they set almost like a modern day baseball record for allowing the number of inherited runners to score. They get ridiculous amounts of grand slams in the first half of the season, like in Oakland, I think, against the Angels they did, and it was just ugly. So hopefully they learn from their mistakes and jump into this pitching market with 2 feet and get involved in the baseball economy like a team that is serious about winning.
So, Lowell, I got a question. If mine was a soliloquy, what was that?
That was a filibuster.
That was a filibuster.
That was a filibuster. Right. And that's all the time we have. Thank you for coming out. Take a breath, Lavelle. Take a breath. Get a drink of water.
This team has a lot of things they need to clean up during offseason.
Apparently. Can you take us down to Double-A now and break down the roster there?
One more thing I think is important, along with the talent, is the camaraderie. The gelling of the team that, you know...
Well, I will say one thing.
The winning teams have.
I will say that there are a lot of people in baseball, including Terry Ryan, who would always tell you, when you win, all of a sudden, guess what? You have good chemistry. People are pretty happy to come to the ballpark. So it's not always cause and effect. Sometimes it's effect and cause.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Linda. And Linda, it's not the greatest grab bag, but if you want to grab something from over here, we will let you do that. Let's do a little business here. If you you can always go to talknorth.com to find all of our shows. But the best way to listen to this show or the network as a whole, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. Want to thank Better Edge.
Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun. Compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge and a number of different sports and event competitions. Use code CHIN, C-H-I-N, for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting betteredge.com. That's BETTOR edge.com.
We'd also like to thank Minnesota Propane, and it looks like it's going to be nice enough to grill next week and even into November.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
And we do want to thank Pizza Luce for hosting this show, the Downtown Show with Cheryl Reeve and Lindsay Whalen. They now have a butternut squash pizza. They have really good salads. They have great drinks, as Lavelle is demonstrating right now. They're also hiring. If you go to pizzaluce.com, if you're looking for employment, they're hiring a kitchen manager. They're hiring a restaurant manager. These are cool places to hang out, cool places to work.
They're offering signing bonuses.
Offering signing bonuses. Yes. So, you know, whether you want looking for a good pizza or a good job, go to pizzaluce.com and check it out. And tell us just a little more about 11 Wells Distillery.
Well, 11 Wells Distillery is located just east of downtown St. Paul. It's at the old Hams Beer Complex. And they drilled down into one of the purest aquifers, I guess, in this region that use the water to make their wonderful spirits. They have a nice, large, expansive living room type area where you can sit and sit with friends and talk and chew the fat and have a good beverage. And they have a cocktail sipping room in the back that you can sit in the back and enjoy their fine selection of whiskeys and rums and some other things as well. So 11 Wells, downtown St. Paul. It's a great place to hang out. It's a different type of hangout. And I think that's good for, I think everybody likes to go to a different place once in a while.
It's relaxing.
And
it really
11
is.
Wells is definitely that spot.
Yeah, 11 Wells Distillery, and I appreciate them hosting me and my wife the other night. Did you have a question?
Hi, I'm Ben.
Hi, Ben.
My question is about just your season end assessment of Rocco. I know there was a lot of controversy at the beginning of the season about him, but then that kind of died away when clearly everything else was broken about the team. But at the end of the day, was he a positive, neutral, or negative to the season?
Who wants to start? Or should I?
Why don't you go for it?
So I'm always torn when I talk about Rocco because I think he's a great guy. And doing exactly what he did this year, in his first 2 years as a major league manager, he won two division titles. And he won 61% of his games, which is ridiculous. It doesn't happen. So I have always been uncomfortable with a lot of the modern managerial techniques, some of which Rocco believes in, which is getting the pitcher out as early as possible before he gets in trouble, using tons of pitchers in every game, resting people whether they need it or not. That stuff all drives me crazy. But I have trouble bashing him for things that worked so well when he had good players who were playing well. What do you guys think?
I think that's a good point, Jim. You know, there's some other stuff, too. I mean, just talking to people at the ballpark during the season, they thought his attention to detail could have been a little bit better in terms of preparation. You know, but they show up early at the ballpark. They don't see guys take a bat in practice, and they don't see fielding drills. And they think that affected some of the one-loss record, that guys weren't sharp enough when it was time to start playing games. I don't know how to feel about that. I've talked to Twins players in the past about they think batting practice is overrated. They prepare for games. They do better with the flip drills inside and hitting off a tee than they do with taking standard batting practice. They feel that's the best way for them to prepare for games. You know,
I know that's the way they feel.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that showed up.
They might be wrong.
I'm not sure that showed up in actuality during the course of the season.
So, you know, maybe there may be some discussions about having a little more pregame structure as far as getting ready for the first pitch. As he's really he's still learning as far as handling a pitching staff. I don't know if the geeks are his driving force to make pitching decisions or Wes Johnson has some feelings, but... like I said, I think it would help Rocco out if he had a closer. I think that would help him put the rest of the bullpen rotation in order. You know, you would have a six-inning guy, a setup guy, and then a closer instead of having different guys in different roles all the time. Like, for instance, I was mad 2 years ago when they played the Yankees in the postseason and Jake Odorizzi did not start games one or two.
Yeah, he should have been the game's two starter.
Starting Randy Dobnak at Yankee Stadium in Game 2, I just think was a blunder.
Yep.
So I hope he's learned from that and realized that sometimes talent wins out instead of whatever printout you're looking at or whatever numbers you're saying that, you know, Odorizzi's pitches aren't going to work well in Yankee Stadium. Odorizzi's a better pitcher than Randy Dobnak. And he's in the playoffs with the Houston Astros. So I still think Rocco's a solid manager. I think there's some things that he could tighten up about how he prepares guys and some game management thing, but I don't think they're fireable offenses. And what he's done, he's won two of the division titles in his first 3 years. So he's got to be doing something right. So it's always easy to say fire the manager when things go wrong. And the season was a disaster this past year. But a lot of things went into it, and hopefully the front office as well as Rocco make the adjustments to make the Twins more competitive in 2022. I think a lot of things that went on were a function of front office moves as much as anything.
So as I look at the managers in the playoffs here and I look at the teams that they have, you know, playing for the talent that they've got, the managers' decisions are going to make a difference during the course of a season of 10 games. I don't know. There's not going to be a lot. And the proof of that, besides the guys in the playoff, you look at the playoff teams, and they're hugely talented teams, offensively, defensively, and on the mound from front to back. The Twins weren't that this year. They were that, close to that, their first 2 years when Rocco did, as you said, Jim, and he won 60% of his games. And I felt like at those times he was the right personality for that club, just kind of let him go. And not to put too much physical pressure on anybody, not to put any mental pressure on anybody. And it kind of felt like with those teams, that was the right way to go. This year was a debacle, and it wasn't the manager's fault. When Buxton, your best player goes down, when your best pitcher goes down, when your catcher that hit 30-some home runs 1 year has struggled for a year and a half in a row, when your right fielder, Max Kepler, doesn't swing the bat like you think, you know, when Kirilloff gets her, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot that any manager could have done, in my view, with that. Could Dusty Baker have managed to make it a little more exciting? I don't know. Maybe. Does Alex Cora? They're supposed to be real smart players, managers kind of guys. And
look at the results, though. The Astros were in arrears over Trash Can Gate, and Dusty came and cleaned that up. The Red Sox were trash last year. They finished last in the AL East.
Dusty came and cleaned that up. He put Altuve in the lineup. He put Bregman in the lineup. Yeah. He put Alvarez in the lineup. He put Gurriel in the lineup. I mean, just on it, those guys can hit, and they also presented him, the front office, with Graveman and Presley to finish the last three innings. Mm-hmm. That's a good club. The Twins have not seen any talent like that yet in 3 years, and Rocco won two divisions. So I think the jury's out on Rocco just because it was too easy the first 2 years, and it was way too hard for any manager last year.
Yeah.
And now if they present, in my view, if they present him with a decent team next year, any kind of decent team, if they get pitching the pitching that Lavelle wants, if the other guys stay healthy, then I think we can start having some ideas about whether Rocco is a good manager or not.
It's well said. I will add this. One of the things I would like to see Rocco change, and I also would have said this when he was winning, I think he's so invested in the idea of rest, physical
that.
And mental rest. I think players should rest when they're tired. I don't think pre-rest works. Don't rest somebody before they're tired. If they're tired, if they're hurt, that's when they rest. Don't take somebody out of the lineup when they're rolling or when they feel good. Let them play themselves to a point where they need a day off.
Or even if they don't feel good and they've gone 0 for 10 and they need to keep swinging so that it doesn't turn into,
right. You
know, four separate stints of 0 for 10
yep.
after rest. You know
yep.
what I mean? I hate the rest idea. I hate
yep.
everything about it. And I could be dead wrong. It could be that from a kinesiologist standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, from all this, maybe it's great. I just happen to hate it. I don't think it's great. And I will tell you, if I were 8 for 12 and the manager came to me and said, I'm going to give you a day off, I just said, no, you are not. Wait till I'm 0 for 12. Then you sent me all you want for, you know, but I hate the whole concept.
I think this is sweeping baseball, though.
I don't care. I can hate all of baseball.
Now, before the 2020 season, I was at the winter meetings, and it was a topic of discussion among major league managers about rest and recovery, that's going to be the new big thing in baseball. The Twins aren't the only one that are doing this now.
I just think they got it. Rest and recovery is fine. I mean, I know that when I played, you know, all 162 games at shortstop one year, I know by September and by the end of the year, I was dog ass tired. But what I learned about that was 2-3 days after the season was over, physically, I'm ready to go
right.
again. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the psychological battle that you have of playing every day, and I am good with giving guys days off, and I'm good with that whole concept of rest and recovery. I just don't think it has to be a week at a time. I think these young guys are in great shape. They can play 3 weeks and then rest and recover.
Well,
you know, they can play 4 weeks and rest and recover. I just don't like it.
You're touching on a big subject here, which is that they're painting all the players with the same brush. And I think the manager
right.
should be able to read different players and come up with different solutions or understand, this guy's a horse. I could keep him out here. I just remember his first year, Rocco's first year, and he was telling guys, I want to see you in the clubhouse in spring training before a certain amount of time. And Jose Barrios used to show up at 8 o'clock to get ready, and now he's like, you know, show up to 9:30 or 10. Barrios went and got a
membership yeah.
at Anytime Fitness in Fort Myers. And he would go there to work
out. So he'd go somewhere at 7
o'clock and then go to the ballpark. You know,
but it's
some guys are just built like that.
It's fine for people to get their sleep. That's different than taking games off. You know, and I still remember covering Paul Molitor when he was 41 years old and he hit 341. And he was – and he played, I think, every day up until he got his 3,000th hit or whatever. And – now, I might be getting my season mixed up. Anyway, he played pretty much every day in 1996, hit 341, and when he got a day off, he was ticked.
Yeah.
He was mad.
My generation, and again, you got to be really careful with the good old days, you know, and I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, that you know, ours was the good old days and it was better. I will just say that in my era, players played. You know, there were a handful of guys... A couple of guys on every team that, you know, kind of got the reputation. They
didn't mind the day off.
They didn't mind a day off. But for most of us, you could tell Gary Gaetti that he, you know, we're going to play for a week and then we're going to sit you down for a little while just to keep you ready. He would tear somebody's head off his neck. You know, I mean, he wouldn't do that. And that's the way that club was. People know that they got to play. Pete Rose would play. You know why Pete Rose would play every day? Because he might get another hit. He was chasing Ty Cobb, right?
Yep.
I mean, there, you can't do anything great sitting on the bench resting. The guys want to play.
There's also an art, you know, I know this from talking to ball players, there's an art to getting yourself ready to play every day, and some guys can do it.
Yes. Yeah. Now they're scheduling days off for guys, like a week in advance.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what we're talking about. That's crazy.
Exactly what I'm talking
that's
about.
That's bonkers.
And everybody knows what the starting lineup is the next day before they leave the clubhouse after that previous game. So they already know.
So I think that's a nice idea. Yeah. I think I would love to have known. Of course, you know, most of the time I was playing every day, I knew I was gonna be in the lineup, but for you know, guys that are in between left-handed, right-handed DHs, and you know, and guys that are platooning and different things, or time to take a rest. You know, when you leave tonight, hey, I can go have three beers because I'm not playing tomorrow, and I played, you know, 4 weeks in a row, and that's okay. I could use a little blow here, but to say we're going to map this out so that you never get tired, honey. And you're going to know, I mean, psychologically, knowing when you leave the ballpark where they're playing tomorrow, that's good. But no, doing that in 7-day segments where, you know, you're going to play six games, and I think that's crazy.
I got a funny rest story to tell you, and then we got a question here. I was covering the Twins. They were in Kansas City for the weekend. It was Saturday. It was a Saturday game and a Sunday day game. Saturday night game, Sunday day game. And so I'm talking to Matt Lawton. And he's like, what you doing after the game? I said, I'm going to go hit one of the casinos. Really? I may join you. Well, who's pitching tomorrow? So I pulled out the game notes I had in my hand. It said Dan Reichert, left-hander. And Lawton's like, okay, TK's not going to play me tomorrow. I'll meet you there. So we go.
Oh, I got a story.
We go to the casino in Kansas City. And we're out to like one. And he's down in gin and tonics, you know. So get to the ballpark the next day. It was a typo in the game notes. Riker was a right-hander, and Lawton was in the lineup. So now I'm on the field before the game, and Lawton's warming up, and the sweat's just pouring out of him. Just pouring out
you
of him.
You mean the gin?
Yeah, the gin. Pouring out. Yeah. He says, Bill, I'm never listening to you again.
You know? All right, two quick stories for our question. First is, I remember 2003. Twins had a horrible first half. Coming off the great 2002 season, had a horrible first half. They're Sunday before the All-Star break, they're in Anaheim. They kind of had a lax morning. AJ gets there late. AJ walks in. The lineup is posted outside the manager's office. He walks up. He sees his name is not in the lineup. He turns to this clubhouse filled with his teammates and coaches and the manager sitting right there. He goes, I'm not in the lineup. Are we even trying to win? And my other story is Cleveland 1 year. This is like 95, somewhere in there. Dave Stevens was getting his shot to be Twins closer because they didn't really have anybody else. So Saturday day game, Dave Stevens comes in, gives up a walk-off home run. Ryan LaFever, myself, run into Dave Stevens that night, strangely, at a bar. I don't know how that happened, that we all ended up in a bar, but weird stuff happens in Cleveland. So we end up buying Dave a beer. He ends up buying us a beer. We end up having a few beers, and at one point, Ryan and I go to Dave. Dave, maybe that's enough. You know, you got a day game tomorrow. He said, the way I pitch today, no way TK uses me tomorrow.
That was a mistake.
So
TK tries to get
here
you back
we
on the
are,
horse.
3 yeah. o'clock the next afternoon, you know, Dave Stevens stumbling out of the bullpen to the mound, second walk-off game-losing home run in 2 days, and here's the sad thing. Then he walks into the dugout and punches a phone.
Yeah, right.
So it wasn't, unfortunately, it's not as funny. And
broke his hand, right?
It broke his hand.
Yes.
And that was it.
I have two stories after the question.
All right, we'll get the question in. Introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, thanks, guys. My name is Thomas Yarbrough, longtime Twins fan. I guess comment on the first part, maybe if guys drank more frequently, they wouldn't need planned rest.
Yeah, I think you know, there were a lot of guys that's the way they felt. Yeah. Most of the guys I played with.
Fair enough. And I was just actually with my brother this last weekend, and we were talking about the Twins. He lives out in Colorado now, and he brought up a great point that frustrated the both of us. We see an ownership group that I guess you wouldn't call them the lowest of the low in the MLB rankings as far as net worth as an organization, and yet it'd be nice, obviously, we hear in Twins territory, it would be nice to see him spend a little bit more and do some more things. Just curious as to, for those of you who are in and around the organization and in and around baseball as much as you are, what's it like seeing something that could be so much more and yet is still, at times, I guess, at least viewed still today as a much more conservative approach from an organizational standpoint than maybe us fans would like to see?
Who wants to start? I'll start.
I think you should.
All right.
I know you have some thoughts about this.
Yeah, and I've been covering the poll ad since I first met Carl. Thank you, by the way. And Ben and Thomas, we have a couple more. They're not the greatest gifts, but we have a couple things. If you want to root through those, you can take whatever you want. One of them is a fanny pack provided by Lavelle Neal. I think you should have them autograph it. I think. So I've always been torn about the poll ads. I thought Carl really did pull a lot of nefarious stuff and try to lie about, the team moved to North Carolina. The team was never going to move to North Carolina. I think he cooked up a contraction with Bud Selig to push things toward a new stadium. I thought Carl played a lot of games. So it was hard for me to defend Carl. And he also decided in the late 90s, I'm not going to spend any money on this team. I'm just going to take the check I get from MLB, and I'm going to field a bad team, and we'll just see what happens. This group of poll ads, there are some good things. They do fund the team to a certain median level. They do put their own money into the stadium. They've kept the stadium. It's beautiful. It's one of the best stadiums in the world. Would I like to see them spend more money on payroll? Yes, but I also understand that almost all major league owners spend a certain percentage of their revenues on payroll. And if you're the Yankees, that might be $200 million and be 30% of revenues or whatever. If you're the Twins, that might be $120 million, and they're spending the same percentage. It's just that local revenues are so out of whack in Major League Baseball that the Polites would have to put $80 million of their own money in to match the Yankees. And while I'd like to see that, I don't know that I can make the argument that they should put $80 million of their own money in on a chance, a roll of the dice, that it's going to end up turning into something close to a championship.
Yeah, I really agree with that. From the business side of things, and I've been in the business world for a while, and I've kind of seeing through that prism as well. And what fans don't realize is that the disparity in local TV and radio revenue is immense. And so to Jim's point, when the Yankees start the season, they're going to pay all of their players from local TV and radio revenue that they get at WPIX and all that stuff in New York before they ever sell a ticket. So then they got ticket revenue, then they got beer, then they got hot dogs, then they've got Major League Baseball, share. And so they're 30 or 40% labor costs, which is, it's the same in a lot of businesses. I mean, you're going to pay 40% for labor costs in a lot of businesses. 40% of Caesar's Palace is more than 40% of Treasure Island. It just is, right? I mean, and so to Jim's point, I mean, I think you try to manage to what your business is, and then, some owners, and I think the second generation of Polez has pretty much been this way. If there's something that's standing in the way, if money's standing in the way of getting a really good player, they've said, go get them. We'll spend some of our own money. So, I think it's a really tough thing to answer about. Why don't you spend more of your own money in this business where nobody else is doing that? That's tough.
The one thing that I've told Twins officials through the years is, I get that you're limited. Your local TV contract is horrible, and the Yankees deal with YES pretty much pays their payroll. But if you're going to do that, if you can't sign a big guy for $25 million a year, throw another $5 million into player development and scouting. And make sure you're in the top five of farm systems. At least you have a flow of talent coming up to the majors that you either use to win with or use to trade to fill in holes. So that's why I try to hold their feet to the fire. And the Tampa Bay Rays usually are in the bottom 10 in payroll annually, and yet they went to the World Series last year and won 100 games this year. And they figure out a way to put together winning teams without splurging. They don't even sign guys to pitchers after the age of 30, I don't think. I think they have a rule that they let these guys walk. They didn't keep David Price. They didn't keep James Shields. They didn't keep the lefty that started last year. And they ended up trading him to San Diego.
Snell.
Chris Snell. Blake Snell. So, yes, I like to see him.
Charlie Morton.
The Twins finished second to him, too.
I will also say, if you're around the franchise, and if you've been around the franchise as long as we all have, Twins used to be really, really cheap. And I mean blimpy sandwiches for spring training. I mean, they used to be built, you know, they were Bill Smith's franchise in a lot of ways, and Bill did not want to spend an extra dollar to make anybody more comfortable.
Remember he had special spring training batting practice baseballs?
Yes,
that would have
to save $5.
Yeah, half the cost of the regular
the organization
baseball?
Was yeah. incredible. And when I went to the Dominican Republic and Venezuela to do baseball stories, the facilities were embarrassing. They were really, really bad. That isn't the case anymore. Now their overseas facilities are really nice. Their minor league stuff's really nice. Their spring training facility's really nice. Their major league ballpark's really nice. So I've also gone against everything I'm saying now by saying, okay, this winter go spend an extra $100 million, you know, just because it would make me happy and because I want to watch good baseball next year. So it's a really good emotional argument to make. Go spend your money, make me happy. If you start applying a lot of logic and business sense to it, it's harder to make the case.
And they've expanded their infrastructure in recent years.
They've spent a lot of money on front office, computers,
building out their
extra people.
Analysis department, yes. Yeah.
See, I think LaBelle makes a great point there. I mean, because to be in a mid-market town like this and this kind of franchise, we've talked about this before, the skill set becomes a little bit different.
Right.
It's vitally important for this front office to be really great at evaluating talent, whether it's amateur talent coming out of high school and college, or whether it's minor league talent that they can go get some people like the Tampa Bay Rays have done. You know, the Tampa Bay Rays, what was Glasnow?
Yeah.
They traded Chris Archer.
Yes.
They get Glasnow
and
Austin Meadows.
Yes.
I mean, that's the kind of expertise
you don't want to trade with Tampa Bay.
That you need to spend money on. Yep. I mean, that's where, and so I think that's a great point. Going out and just saying, okay, you should spend $80 million of your own dollars and sign, you know, Max Scherzer or who, you know, pick some names, I think is less important nowadays than holding their feet to the fire, LaBelle, if you do, about saying, you have to understand, you've got to be really good at this. And then Falvey and Levine have to be held accountable for whether or not they're really good at it, because that's going to be their job.
And one other aspect of all this, if you look back through Twins history, and I'm talking about like that's 30, 40 years mostly, when the Twins have been good, it really hasn't been free agent dollars. It's
no.
Quite often it's been trades.
Trades and Rule 5.
Trades and Rule 5. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
And the Rule 5 that you're talking about, Johan Santana, was a trade in the Rule 5. They traded with Houston to get that pick to get Johan Santana. The Twins have been much better with trades than with free agency. And there's a reason for that. Usually when you sign a free agent, you're admitting that your organization screwed up and is desperate to fix a problem with money. When you make a trade, usually it's a battle of wits and experience. And if you can win that, then you can get Johan Santana for absolutely nothing. You can get Francisco Liriano and Joe Nathan for a catcher you don't need anymore. You can get really good players if you can trade.
Yep. Yeah, and they've done it a number of times. The Knobloch trade paid dividends for like 10 years.
Traded for Frankie V, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yeah, I think Terry Ryan did a phenomenal job as a general manager. His legacy is hurt because they were never able to develop the kind of frontline pitching that a lot of teams have, and that's what has kept them out of deep into the postseason. And that's the one thing that, for whatever reason, they had a whole lot of. Bakers and Slowies and Blackburns instead of guys that threw 98. You know, and that's just the way it was.
That was the pitch to contact era,
and that's why as much as Twins fans lament,
those pitchers didn't understand that the idea was not pitch to contact. They did that a lot. It was pitch to bad contact.
Right. No,
they didn't do that enough.
No, as Jim once said, they pitched explosion.
Yeah. and to wrap up this part of the conversation. I know Twins fans hate all the losses to the Yankees in the postseason, and I understand that. But in general, when the Twins have lost to the Yankees, they've lost to superior teams.
No question.
0-6 is the shame, because if Liriano stays healthy and they play the way they should have played against the Oakland A's with that team that played 4 months of the best baseball we've ever seen, that could have been a World Series champion. That team. I agree.
That
was a great team.
That loss, the loss to Oakland there was just – astonishing. It was heartbreaking for me because maybe they were guilty of what I was guilty. I was looking past that.
Yeah.
I was looking past Oakland. I just think that they were such a superior team to Oakland, and all next thing you know, we're all home.
It was like they got hot, they made the playoffs, and they were like, we make the postseason. Well, and by the time they were done exhaling, they were out of the postseason.
To be even more specific about it, that was the year they go on that crazy late run to win the division. And they thought they were going to Yankee Stadium right after that game on Sunday when they beat the Royals. They were going to get on a plane and go, and they were all geared up for the Yankees. And then Detroit beats somebody beat somebody, and all of a sudden they are magically the division champions, and they're going to sit there, and Oakland's coming in, and those guys partied like crazy.
Yeah.
And they partied because they didn't have to play the Yankees. They completely overlooked the Oakland A's.
And if you remember, the paper sent me to New York.
Yes.
To do preview stories for a series that never happened.
The Star Tribune budget got a is free still weekend. Trying to recover from that.
I got a free weekend in New York.
I'm sure you just stayed in your hotel room, though.
Oh, yeah, I was afraid to go outside. You know how much danger is in New York?
No, I'm talking about that. I was
just, you walk out of the street, you fall into a bar, you know?
Oh, man.
I wish I'd known that back then. I'd have gone long bourbon prices, you know, that right before you went there.
Yeah.
Man, I'd have made a killing on bourbon prices spiking at that point.
Roy has brought his bat, and we did not get to, like, a demonstration segment. So the people who are here, let's think of something cool for you to demonstrate. And I'm the hitters I'm most interested in on the Twins right now are Garver and Kepler. You want to kind of give us a hint as to what either of them are working on, or what worked for them or what didn't work for them this year? Or you pick somebody. You pick somebody you can demonstrate well.
I know one thing that I want to demonstrate to the fans.
And by the way, if this is going to work better without the headset, we can end the show at this point and let you just do it for the people who are here.
Is this the cord for this microphone here? You may want to hold this microphone.
Tell you what, well,
this is good.
We are going to end the podcast version of this.
With him hitting me with his backswing?
Yes.
That was my thought.
Yes. We'll get photos of that. It'll work better. Hey, we want to thank everybody for coming out. Please give Lavelle and Roy a hand if you don't mind. Thank you to Pizza Luce for hosting us. We appreciate it. And now let's go to the demonstration portion of the show.